This week on the Barag World Show, we talked to Mike Coos. We discuss how to create and choose the best imagery to support your content. This week's show is sponsored by Gathered Content and Stock.io. Hello, welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul Boag, and joining me on this week's show is Marcus. Hello, Marcus. How are you?
I'm fine, Paul. How are you?
Oh, I've got a never-ending cold, and it's just annoying at this point.
Yeah, my poorly wife and Dan and Chris at work, everyone's ill. I seem to have avoided it so far.
Well, you don't get ill particularly often, do you? Your back goes out every now and again in the kind of tradition of old men everywhere.
Yeah, although it's never been as bad. The worst my back ever was the first year we set up Headscape, which is years ago. And I was I was bad for months then. But yes, I do. Well, Chris always says that I'm always ill. It's just him. Like, he's always ill.
Well,
and you are.
Oh, I'm always ill, yeah. But then I'm a kind of sickly child. I don't go outside very
much. Not enough sunlight.
Partly, and I think the other problem is that I don't interact with other human beings. So on the rare occasions where I do, like go to a conference, you know, I've got no antibodies at all. No ability to fight any kind of germ whatsoever. And so I immediately get sick.
You need one of those kind of plastic tent things around you.
Exactly, a bubble.
A bubble, yes. You'd quite like that, because then people couldn't come too close, could they?
I know. You wouldn't have Americans hugging you. It'd be wonderful. But
you're referring to our lovely week in Spain, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, everybody hugs you. That Brad Frost, he's very huggy. Don't like that.
He did
Molly Molly Holschlag, she's another hugger. Not that she was there, but anyway.
He started the conference, a smashing conference that both of us went to, or Paul was speaking at. I did roll my eyes with his enthusiasm, I have to say.
Yeah. Enthusiastic people. I'm not having it. And my life's just misery at the moment. Oh. It's just everything.
It's not really misery, is it?
It is.
No, it
is. My life is a disaster. Do you want to know why my life is a disaster?
Go on then.
So not only have I been thrown out of my home because I'm
through choice
refurbishing it. Yeah, yes. Admittedly. Well, my wife's choice, really, let's be honest. So I'm homeless, yeah. and then I was doing some design work this week. How exciting! When was the last time? I know, right? And just to kind of reimagine something, basically. So it was really, you know, kind of great design work. I'm really excited about it. My Mac broke.
Oh yeah, you've got a dodgy keyboard, haven't you?
I have a dodgy keyboard. So my Mac is now away for 7 to 10 days.
Because Ian at Headscape has the same problem.
Well,
he has a problem with his keyboard. His R key doesn't work. And they said, oh, we'll have to have that in for 4 days, I think they said. And he's like, oh.
So, I know. So it's a right pain in the arse. So that's a disaster. And then, on top of which, despite getting up at the crack of dawn, I still didn't manage to get the iPhone for this Friday. So I'm sulking.
Oh, I just wait a few weeks and then just walk into any shop and buy one.
Have you actually ever met me, Marcus? Yep. What's the probability of me waiting for anything that I want?
Yes, but you're not 7 years old anymore.
At the moment, mate, I've actually ordered two.
Really?
Yeah. Because I've ordered one from Apple that's saying it's going to take a couple of weeks to arrive.
Right.
And then the Carphone Warehouse, Blithely, told me that, we can deliver it on the 3rd of November. So I ordered it via them as well. But I don't think they're going to deliver, which is why I've got the fallback on Apple. And I might even, if I'm feeling enthusiastic, get up Friday and go to a store and see what happens.
Wow, you could camp outside an Apple store.
Well, I was going to go to the knockoff Apple store in Salisbury instead.
Okay, now I'll just wait.
And
go and then just buy one. Walk into a shop and say I'd like that one, and they'll say yes, sir. Here it is. and that's all will so, be lovely.
But that's so dull.
It's that's not.
So dull and sensible.
But Paul, you were just complaining about how your life is miserable, and I was giving you an example of how to make it less miserable.
No, no, because that scenario involves patience and waiting, and neither, you know, you've got some misery in life is just down to your personality type, right? Mm. And I can't deal with waiting.
Yeah, I guess I'm not that excited about it. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like, don't get me wrong, I think it'll be a lovely thing, and I'm really looking forward to having a better camera, particularly. Mm-hmm. Everything else is like, well, it's just another iPhone, isn't it? Really?
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm excited about it, but equally I do know that the minute I get it home, I'll be excited about it for maybe a couple of hours. And then life goes back to normal, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, then you'll realise it's just the same as the old one, but a few little bits different. You'll play with putting the studio light on somebody, or the stage light. Ooh, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then you put it down again.
And I'll wirelessly charge it for once, and then go, this takes too long, and plug it in.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that'll be it, really. So, really, what we're concluding is life is meaningless.
Or Apple need to make something more exciting.
Yeah.
They haven't made anything exciting for years. I mean, your laptop, Ian's laptop, I mean, I've got the same one here. I took it to Spain with me and realised that I wish I'd taken my old Air, which just sat next to me over there, because it's half the weight. I know it's not half, but it feels like it is.
Yeah.
So I have to carry this lump around that doesn't work so well. The keyboard feels horrible. It's just...
But do you think
good?
Well, I'm not sure. You see, I'm not sure whether it's actually Apple's fault. Well, it is partly, you know. But also, I just think we've got really unrealistic expectations. I mean, what would be good? What would make you go, you know, wow? I will queue up overnight to get that.
I don't know. There's the sci-fi books have got us kind of wearing earrings and things like that that do all this stuff, a bit like the watch, I suppose. But the watch, I've been reading a book by a futurist who I can never remember his name. Anyway, he's famous, and he thinks that we will all have access to the internet via contact lenses or glasses.
Oh yeah.
Now that would get me out of bed if I could. Yeah, not that I want to put contact lenses in my eyes at all, but if I could have that level of access to stuff, then yeah, that would be really exciting.
But the thing is with that is, you know, it'll come incrementally, and so
exactly.
And so the first one, I mean, we've already got Google glasses, and that's shit.
The first one will be contact lenses with a wire dangling down your cheek. you're absolutely right. Yes. These things will arrive when I'm 75 and my eyes don't work, even less than they don't work now.
Well, yeah, but then you'll get them replaced by bionic eyes and live forever in your new robot body.
Yeah, well, apparently that's not us, Paul. It's maybe my grandchildren might live forever. But even they're probably 10 years too early.
Is it Mitchell Kaka that you're reading?
Yes, that's his name.
Yeah, he's a really cool guy. He managed to, when he was a kid, because he's a Nobel Prize winning physicist. When he was a kid, he blew up his parents' garage and knocked out the entire block's worth of electricity by making a superconductor magnet or something. I don't know. James is telling me about it. He sounds very cool.
Yeah, so, he is.
I am excited. I am, however, excited about the camera, because what phone have you got? Have you got a 6S? The same
as
me.
I've got a 6S. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's going to be a real jump up for us, because I mean, for example, we don't even have portrait mode, which is pretty. I mean, looking at some of the photographs people have been taking, even on a 7, is, you know, they're really nice with that kind of blurry background and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Ed and Dan have got the big 7, the 7 Plus.
Oh, yeah.
And that's got the double camera thing in it. Mm. And that's what made me think, ooh, that'll be lovely. Because I don't really take photographs with anything else these days.
No, neither do I really.
I've got an old DSLR, but I've got no desire to get a new one. And having it in your phone, it's always there. One thing I would like to do when a retirement project, this is, is to go through the 50,000 photographs I've taken in the past few years.
Yeah, I know, that would be good.
Because I take them and I never look at them.
Yeah, Oh, I do every now and again. Anyway. But that's, I mean, talking of photography, we got Mike Coos on the show later, and he talks quite a lot about photography, so it's a good one. Have you listened to this interview, or are you unprepared as normal?
No.
No. It's worth listening to, actually. It's a really good one. We talk generally about kind of imagery and selecting imagery and stuff, but then he talks a little bit about photography and taking good imagery just using a smartphone, because of course that's what he's become known for.
I know, because he was on the show, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, and I just couldn't believe where he'd gone from being a web designer to basically being the go-to person for kind of reportage, is that the right word, maybe, photography for sort of like advert shoots. He'd be the one going snapping.
He does a huge variety of stuff. That's why he felt like a really good person to interview for this show, because we're talking about imagery and imagery and use of social media on your website, stuff like that. And that's inevitably going to be a mix of illustration, photography, using stock imagery, all those kinds of different things. And Mike has got his finger in all of those pies. Do you know what I mean? He does everything from doing illustrative work to web design work to photography. So, it's a really good interview, actually. Should be a good one.
Cool.
But before we jump into that, because this show is about imagery and we're talking about making use of imagery, I wanted to share you a little bit of kind of follow-up reading of stuff that you can get into to investigate this subject a little bit more. And I want to share a couple of posts from me and then one from Buffer, actually, the social media people. The one from me is stop using stock photography cliches, which is, I'll put links into all of this into the show notes. But you can go to it at boagworld.com/design/stock-photography. And that's basically an article about avoiding shaking hands, basically. People shaking hands seem to be everywhere. And just, the same images you see again and again and again. So
it's really hard, though. Finding good imagery. As you know, Paul, we work for a number of law firms.
Mm.
And they don't, other than themselves, which obviously they have hundreds of pictures themselves, they don't have any kind of associated imagery.
Ah, we talk about this with Mike.
Right, but they'd all quite like it. Mm. But, and this is the kind of the main issue with lawyers, is they are very, very literal people.
Mm.
And if you go down the route of gorgeous-looking imagery, that you might have to take one or two mental steps to maybe make some kind of connection. They won't have it.
Yeah.
They want pictures of, courthouse steps.
Yeah,
and books, law books in a nice old library kind of thing, and it's that doesn't work because that's cliched, and you get to the point of a current design we're doing where we've just said you're not having any, but what we've agreed with them is that they're going to do, using the word reportage again, they're getting in a photographer to kind of just take pictures of them at work over a week or so, and you use that, which I think, fingers crossed, is going to work.
In this post I talk about some of the alternatives, things like using illustration. I talk about how you use the imagery within the page. You can take even a fairly dull image if you kind of use it in the right way, and of course you can stylize imagery as well, and then you can pick imagery that's got taken from a particular angle or is cropped in a interesting way, but you're right. I mean, this whole thing about not being too literal, I think is a really good thing. But if you've got a client that's can't wrap their heads around that.
Or some of them will and some of them won't. And you know what lawyers are like when they start arguing. It is their lives are about arguing with each other and other people. So it's just been a bit of a nightmare, that one.
Mm. I mean, but your solution, I think, is quite a good one, which is don't necessarily use imagery. Use typography. You can do some amazing stuff with typography.
Yeah.
That looks really good. But actually, you really should listen back to Mike's interview that we'll run in a minute, because he talks about how his process for getting to less literal imagery, which starts with a kind of strap line or, you know, an idea that he then builds imagery out from. So he kind of leads the client to the understanding of the imagery, if that makes sense, in quite a nice way. So it's worth listening to that. So stop using stock photography cliches was one. The other one, it's a bit of a weird selection, I guess, because it's not actually about imagery. It's called, it's an article I wrote called How to Squeeze the Most from Your Imagery. I'm not going to try and read the URL for that one. You can just Google it and you'll get it back, or look at the show notes. And this one is a really about image optimization and image performance, and how to get your imagery to download lightning fast. So you might want to check that one out. And I talk in particular about a company that I'm going to mention later when we look at apps that do all the hard work for you if you don't want to do it, because getting fast imagery on your website is a big deal, and really important. And then the very last one I wanted to mention is a post by Buffer, and it's the ideal sizes for your social media posts. Damn, that sounds interesting, doesn't it? But it actually talks you all through what size you should save images out to share on various social media platforms, from Facebook to Pinterest to wherever else, which is actually quite useful. For example, every time I put out a post, I always try and associate an image with that, and you need to know what sizes you're working with and that kind of thing. So yeah, that's a useful little one as well. So there we go. That's some reading for you to check out. Let's quickly talk about a sponsor, and then we'll play Mike's interview. And actually, it's a very relevant sponsor. It's almost like I planned this and I knew what I was doing. So today's sponsor is Stock.io. So this is, as it sounds, it's a stock library, which you've got thousands upon thousands of original high-quality imagery. Both photography, graphics, vectors, but they've also got lots of iconography, typography, so fonts, and video as well. They've got a huge range of stuff. And the great thing is, it's all free. Absolutely free for personal use and commercial use. It's the guys, you know, the Mighty Deal people. I don't know whether you've come across those then, Marcus, but they're the people behind it, and they've put it together, and it's absolutely superb. It's a really, really good resource. Loads of, you know, real good quality imagery and graphics and typography, etc., that you can make use of. It's all ad driven, so it costs you absolutely nothing. You don't even need to, and I like this, you don't even need to register to download the images if you want to. You know how some of these free sites, they force you to register so they've got your data and they can use it. This one, you don't have to. You can just go and download stuff. You can register, and it's probably worth doing so, because that then, once you've obviously got an account, they can keep track of what you downloaded in case you want to get at it again, and you can also favorite stuff and all that kind of thing. So to check these guys out, just go to stockio.com, and you can, yeah, download to your heart's content, which will be very useful, because as we discover in the conversation today, imagery is absolutely essential when it comes to any kind of content marketing, really. All right. So should we get Mike on the show, have a little chat with him, see what he's got to say? So over to Mike. So hello, Mike. It's great to have you on the show. How have you been doing recently? You doing well?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Paul. Yeah, everything's going well.
Good. You've got a very interesting kind of career that's developed for you, because you kind of do this huge mix of different stuff, don't you? From branding to web design to consultancy, and then, of course, the whole Instagram and photography side of things. So it must be keeping you amazingly busy, I'm imagining.
Yeah, it's good. It's I guess I've always just had my creatively speaking, a sort of finger in a lot of different pies, and just, you know, like a lot of different aspects of creativity, whether it's design, branding, web UI work, and photography. And I've just almost, I guess, just when you start doing something and you're really into it, it's quite especially if the way we're connected today, it's very quick for people to sort of latch onto something. And you know, you start photography, and if you put some effort into it, something comes of it, because you can just share stuff so easily.
Mm.
There's a few things I've ended up doing like that. And, you know, if I put something out, it's sometimes I, you know, you know that you could put a couple of things onto Instagram or Twitter, and if you find it interesting, someone else probably will, and suddenly you're getting a request for that. You know, like I'm trying to think what it was. I had a good example of this, of something I did for pleasure, you know, creative pleasure. Mm. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, someone asks for it, you know, and on a commission. And that's happened to me a few times, you know, just doing something for fun. And then, you know, someone comes back to you going, hey, I'd like one of those.
I mean, but do you think part of the reason that happens is because you've been able to build up quite a big following on like Instagram and things like that? Do you know, has that made a big difference, do you think?
Yeah, well, it definitely has for my photography work, obviously.
Yes.
I mean, there's sort of the stuff I do on Instagram is a sort of a mix between, in a way, it started off much more people just sort of, I guess, using my following to promote their products or their area, like I've done sort of tourist work. But more often now, actually, it's a mix. It's a mix of a lot of different stuff. Like, yes, I do use my following to help them promote something, but I'm actually, normally the sort of the engagement involves, you know, there's a bunch of deliverables. For example, you know, it will be like, you know, three posts on Instagram or a couple of stories, but then it will also be like a set of 20 pictures documenting this place or this event,
right,
that they can then use, as, you know, on their channels and their literature that they may put together themselves.
Mm.
And also it's involved into, like, I've started to do talks and workshops and photography for people too.
Mm.
You know, and that's something, you know, that's been part of something I've done recently, you know, that creating a set of pictures, posting some stuff on Instagram, doing a set of workshops, and it's all been wrapped up in one sort of sponsorship engagement. So
yeah,
it's nice because it becomes much more than just posting content on Instagram. It's got me involved in doing, you know, it's a lot more, the projects are a lot more meaty and interesting. It's good.
Mm. Yeah. So, of course, I mean, I've seen some of the clients that you've worked for, and it's, you know, it's people like Land Rover. And, of course, the great thing with working, I imagine, with someone like Land Rover is that they've got these kind of incredible locations that they go to, and there's kind of imagery built in there. But, you know, a lot of organizations don't have that kind of nice set of imagery to begin with, you know, that they're, I don't know, a hosting company or an HR mm-hmm. company. And so imagery isn't as obvious. I mean, how do you deal with situations like that to stop you ending up with like pictures of businessmen shaking hands?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a funny thing. This is something I talk about, you know, this, to me, this question relates much more to, you know, when I design for the web, and you do get clients that do all sorts of different things. And sometimes they're not, you know, sometimes they're doing something that is, like you say, a bit more difficult to visualize because they're dealing with data or, you know, they're sort of an office-based tool or something. And so without thinking too hard, you are thinking of images, like you said, like people pointing at iPads and such and looking at screens and shaking hands. And this is something that I've been talking about on the conference circuit of late, which is really how to, I guess, my feeling is that when you design something, and this is sort of really about sort of online branding and stuff, is that when you're talking about imagery, is that it really is an opportunity in most companies to bring in some more interesting visuals to tell their story of what they do. Because, you know, whilst a company might say, for example, have some sort of be a team project management app, or they might be dealing with gathering statistics, it's probably not what they're, that's what they technically do, but they probably have a mission, you know, or a goal that they want to help people. They probably want to do something. What they're actually trying to do is like save time.
Yeah.
For in a certain space, you know, and then what you can start doing then is you start to focus on that part of what the problem that they're trying to solve, rather than the technical solution that they provide. And that's what I do when I take on a client I start to look into what it is. I dig into what they're trying to do, you know, find out what it is that is driving them to build that company up, and not really focus on what the tool actually does. And that's often much more interesting than what the technical, what the tool does technically. And that can provide you opportunities to then create interesting imagery, whether that's photography or illustration, for example. And I've worked with a bunch of companies in the past. Like, for example, and this is the example I think is probably my best example in my portfolio, for example, is a company I did a website for called Mixed, which is a web design agency. And obviously, by the very nature of being a web design agency, you know, you are one of thousands.
Yeah.
And you're made up of the same components. You have a team, a location where you work, and a portfolio, essentially. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you have to have a strong portfolio. But outside of that, how do you sort of differentiate yourselves from the competition? If you're just going to use sort of standard imagery, like pictures of people working behind Apple Macs, for example, that's exactly what you expect to see.
Yeah.
Or like some post-it notes on a wall or something. All this sort of stereotypical stuff you think of. So what I did with them was dig into who they are, and you know, they worked on some big sort of hefty sort of back-end development projects, but they also had this keen eye for visual design, and they're always keen to stress that they cared about both aspects. And within their work, I feel like their core value to what they did was striking a balance between aesthetics and functionality. And they were keen to stress that either one of them was not going to be, you know, they weren't, gonna sacrifice the functionality for aesthetics, but they weren't gonna ditch their sort of goal to create a engaging visual experience either. And so I came up with this strap line, which is beautiful form, perfect function. And it was just really, it's just like a key phrase, and then which to me is the compass for the direction of that site design, visual design, and it becomes part of the branding. And everything I do is really with that in the back of my mind. And so what I did was create this homepage for them, which randomly served up an object which I felt was a sort of demonstrated that exact phrase. So I used like a simple chair, a spoon, a classic pencil, which I all felt performed perfectly, and but are also aesthetically pleasing, So, and then I sort of used certain imagery, throughout that. Then I had that bank of assets I created, which was this pencil and a spoon, and I could use them throughout the site and bring back phrases, that use the language to just always have this sort of. It sort of resonated throughout the website. Always had, and that became, obviously they had all the standard content you expect to find on a web design agency site, but it was wrapped up in this story of balance between form and function. And for me, that's doing that sort of, applying that sort of thinking is a good way when you're working with any company especially working in a sector that's difficult to visualize without thinking about, like you say, the standard images of people shaking hands or looking at iPads. Then you start applying this sort of storytelling to what they do. It opens up another door to a whole load of potential creative opportunities. And that's the sort of thinking I apply to pretty much all the projects that I work on.
Mm.
in order to avoid that standard imagery.
Yeah, and that makes a huge amount of sense, because you're telling a story rather than just selecting a set of images that you know describe the thing that you're creating. I mean, of course, the problem is not everybody can hire someone like you to create these beautiful images, although I think anybody can go away with that idea of, well, what's the core story here? What's that core strapline? But for those people that, you know, especially with content marketing, which is what we're talking about this season, potentially you're generating large amounts of imagery. You know, you're trying to put out a lot on Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that in order to grab people's attention. And so you end up looking at stock libraries. Now, you get a lot of crap on stock libraries, but you also get some good stuff. So, I mean, how do you tell the difference? How can you look at, you know, this potentially millions of images that it pulls back to you and actually pick the good from the bad? What should you be looking for?
Well, and I'm not sure if there's like an exact science to that, but I think, you know, it for me it's instinctual. You know, you just look at stuff and you instantly tell the things that look staged and, you know, stereotypical office scenes, and as I think, you know, and then stuff that looks a bit more natural. I think depends what you're looking for. If you do need an image that is very much say you can't apply that sort of thinking I'm talking about. Say that your client needs something a bit more literal. So, you know, creating these stories and giving yourself the opportunity to use interesting imagery just sort of isn't available to you because it's not what the client wants. Then it's sort of a case of like, okay, maybe you do need a picture of some sort of office, you know, but you don't want it to be like that sort of glass walled office unit space of everyone wearing suits. And then you can look on certain sites and things like, for example, in the past I have used stuff from Stocksy, which is a library that just has this, you know, the general tone of the pictures is just a bit more down to earth. So their offices are maybe, I don't know, just a bit more rustic, and the photography style isn't sharp, bright, white light of everyone with suits. It's just a bit more relatable to the kind of clients I've been working with. And I guess it's just a slight tweak and style thing there. And also you have Unsplash, which is obviously this huge free library, which now has millions of pictures on it. And that's an interesting one, because whilst in the past that library, I feel like the downfall to Unsplash in the past was that for people using the images was that you sold them everywhere because they were nice images and everyone was just using them to stick on their website, which then instantly then makes you, to me, it sort of cheapens your product on website. Because you see that picture. I've seen that picture, for example, of a girl holding a sparkler up to the camera on about 20 websites. I mean, so as soon as you see it, you feel like you just got a free image of a website. It doesn't look like there's any thought going into it. But now that everyone can upload all sorts of images all the time, they're almost using it as like a portfolio. There's millions of images on there that you don't see around all the time. And so you can get stuff off there that's, if you use it, there's a good chance you probably only see it on your site. But the problem is with that site, I feel like it's not so necessarily geared towards, I mean, it has got a lot of stuff on there now, but, you know, it's still a lot more sort of like landscape heavy, maybe, you know, and not such the great images, amazing photography on there, but maybe not so necessarily as practical as you'd want it to be for some cases, you know. But I mean, that is changing because there's so much stuff on there now. You can pretty much type in anything and there will be something. But so I guess that's an option, you know.
You're certainly right about things like, you know, picking something that's got a little bit of a different style to it, is, you know, shot in a different way. The lighting is a little bit different, or the angle is a bit more interesting, you know, or people are dressed in a slightly different way. which brings us on to the area of photography, because I mean that's a huge part of any kind of content marketing work, is to include a lot of photography. But you know, not every company can afford to pay professional photographers to do stuff for them. And I one of the things that's always really impressed me about the photography that you do is, you know, you don't have fancy kit, or, you know, most of the time you are literally just using a smartphone. So I wonder whether there was advice that you could give to people about being able to take their own photographs that they could use, you know, in content marketing areas.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's totally 100% possible. You know, it's with a smartphone, any smartphone. I often get asked which phone I use, and I've always had an iPhone for personal use, but I've used other phones, with LG, Samsung phones. And, you know, there's a lot of, if you've got a modern smartphone, they've all got, you know, pretty good cameras on them now. So the results you can get are, you know, technically are pretty good. And I think the key thing to, I think stress really is, it's much more about, in my mind, much more about how you use it and how creatively you use any camera, whether it be a phone or a camera. But I think with a phone, you can definitely create images that are worth using, you know, by yourself. And it's really just down to being a bit smart of how you use it and creative when you're using it. So the one thing I feel like it's a little bit, the one thing you're disadvantaged with on a phone is, for example, you can't really create a shallow depth of field. You can, but you have to be super close to something to get a blurred effect in the background or a blurred effect in the foreground, which is what you normally see in high quality stock imagery, because they're using a real camera.
Yeah.
You know, which has a huge lens, you know, not a huge lens, but has a lens that is capable of producing that effect. And so I feel like what I do with my iPhone is, there's a bunch of things I do. I sort of say, if you've got a scene that you want to take, which is appropriate for your, you know, the content you want to make, is with a phone, for example, you can think about, the first thing I think about is light, you know, like shooting it at a certain time of day, for example. So no matter, or with inside, using window light, you know, things, your lights, you know, it has the greatest effect on any picture. So if you shoot in the middle of the day outside, you're not going to have interesting light, because it's beaming down from above. Everything's drenched in light. There's no interesting shadows. But if you're shooting in the morning, for example, it comes from a much lower angle. And no matter where you are, you know, it is creating interesting shadows and makes any particular scene that you may want to shoot much more interesting, just in the terms of the light that is shining on the subject. So it could be a street or an office, even if the light coming in a window at a certain angle. And so that's the first thing I'd think about, is when I'm shooting and when to get the best light. And to me, you get much more interesting light when it's low in the sky, so either morning time or evening. Secondly, I would think about what, like you said earlier, what angle you take it from. And this is really important for an iPhone or a smartphone camera, just because, you know, it can take a normal scene and give it much more interest. And so, because if you think if you just take photographs from eye level all the time, you see the world exactly as you see it every day. But as soon as you take a picture from, you know, just a foot above the ground, for example, you're seeing an image of a place that you don't generally see. So it's more interesting, it's more surprising. And so just by holding your camera really high or really low, you can make an image more interesting. And also that you can sort of, you know, create that shallow depth of field effect actually on smartphones. Sometimes what I do is, you know, make sure something in the foreground is super close to the lens, and you do get that sort of little blurred effect in the foreground. And then, you know, and it creates, not only does it create that sort of shallow depth of field, it just gives the photo in general a sense of depth, you know, so you can really feel the depth within the photograph. And And so, and what's cool about these little tips actually is you can sort of layer them up. So first of all, you're thinking about the light, then the sort of the angle and the composition of the picture, and then maybe thinking about putting something in the foreground. And each one of these decisions all contribute to the success of the image.
Mm-hmm.
And even with a smartphone, by thinking about those sort of simple things, you can then create, you know, images that people wouldn't realize were taken on a phone.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And it, I mean, some of the stuff that you're posting is absolutely gorgeous. And you just think and it's not always even special things. You know, it's easy if you're taking a picture of an amazing mountain or a beautiful, young child or whatever, then that's kind of good material. But you can really make a great image out of anything if it's done right.
I was just going to say that's exactly true. I mean, that's something else I talk about, is that, you know, photographing the simple things. It's like, it's great to go to all these cool locations and stuff, but actually, you know, you can, if you're, you know, if you're, you, you can basically make a interesting picture out of almost anything, mm-hmm. you know, just like, just especially like in autumn, for example, like there's like leaves on the ground and there's, you know, like grass has dew on it, and there's all you don't need to be in an amazing location to create an interesting image.
Mm. And it's also about, see, with those examples you just gave there, it's about getting in close and looking at the detail of the world. You know, detail that you often overlook. You know, you're looking, most of the time you're looking at the big scale because you're looking for not getting run over by a bus or whatever. You're not looking at an individual key on a keyboard or a blade of grass or whatever else. So that's a big part of it. But what about editing? Yeah. I mean, once you've got this image, I mean, the images that come off of smartphones are pretty good, generally speaking, but do you spend a lot of time editing? And if so, are you applying filters or are you editing by hand? What advice would you give around that kind of thing?
Yeah. So, well, I feel like, I edit most of my pictures in Instagram. I sometimes do some bits and bobs in Photoshop the picture's good, but it's got some sort of defect that I have to fix. Yeah. Sometimes I do that. But majority of the stuff I post is edited in Instagram, because Instagram is now a really powerful application. You know, for a phone, I mean, it has all the basic things you need to edit a picture, even without any of the filters. You know, you can adjust, you know, the brightness, the contrast, the sort of the detail. You can adjust the color slightly. There's lots and lots of things you can do on those filters, and it's super easy to use. Mm. I mean, basically the editing tools within the app.
Oh, yeah.
They're very basic versions of everything you would want to do to a photograph, and you can adjust your photographs in quite a big way if you want to. And I would, you know, I'd suggest that people do that. You know, they experiment with going through. I sort of just essentially sometimes, you know, you just go through from one side to the other in a way, and I look at a photograph. I don't really have a sense, you know, an agenda with a picture. I just look at it and go, okay, this needs to be darker. So that's the first thing I change. And then normally that has an effect on the picture. You go, okay, it's darker, but now it's losing some of the detail of the brickwork in the background. So I use the structure tool, which sort of adds a little bit of detail to the, to the photograph. And you just sort of like, it's almost like a, you adjust something, it gives you some feedback, you make another decision, adjust something else, and until you're happy with the picture. And also you have the ability to sort of crop things a bit and zoom in a little bit on Instagram. And, you know, you're getting high quality pictures off your phone, so you can afford to zoom in on a part of a photograph without losing too much quality. And then you can use some of the filters. I mean, sometimes the way I use the filters, for example, is, they have certain qualities, certain filters. So one of them might lighten up the center of the picture. And if a photograph happens to have light in the middle of it, it's sometimes nice to sort of exaggerate that a little bit of a filter. And you can normally, what I would do is just use that filter and then just push it up gently, because you obviously you can go from 0 to 100% with the strength of the filter, and you just like use a tiny part of that filter. Essentially, I just normally I use the control, the general editing tools rather than a filter, but sometimes I will add, like there's certain filters on there that have some nice general color tones that you can just use a little bit of to, add, for example, there's a filter called Aiden, for example, which to me is like, it sort of almost like adds a bit of general autumnal feel to your pictures. So if you're, and you can just use a little bit of that and it would sort of enhance that a little bit. And I'm also, I feel like, my goal of taking pictures is to sort of try and convey what it was like to be there at that time.
Ah.
So, and, and the funny thing is when you get the pictures back of your phone, you very often, they don't look like that time. They don't feel like that time because the lens of the camera is so much less sophisticated than, the lens in your eye and your brain taking all the, fully experiencing the light. And you often take a picture into the sun and it's blurred and it blows out. But you can sort of, in a way, the editing journey for me is going back and correct, it's sort of like it's taking what you've got off the camera and then taking the necessary steps to make it feel like what it was like to be there again. And so
that's a really nice way of thinking about it, because one of the questions I was going to ask you is, well, you said, you edit it until you're happy, but how do you know when it's done? But I'm guessing that it's when you feel it represents what you saw at the time. Is that where you head for?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's sort of almost not just what you saw, but what you felt.
Mm.
Because, there's an example actually of a picture that I use when I'm doing this photography workshop, which is a picture of Big Ben. I was walking into Westminster and I took a quick snap because it was a beautiful evening. There's all these pinks rushing through the sky. I can see the detail on the clock face. And it was just a really nice atmosphere. But when I got the photograph on my phone to look back later, it was all silhouetted and it didn't capture those colors I remember. So then I went in, and it's extremely sort of heavy editing example, but it's a good example, I think, because it demonstrates this thought process. So I sort of then recropped in around the clock face because that's what I was thinking about. Mm. I pushed out all the shadows and you could see the detail again. I used a little color tool on Instagram to insert some pink back into the sky. And with a few tweaks here and there, it was then much more, even though it was very different looking at the end, in my mind, it was much more representative of the way it felt like to be there at the time than the photo the camera delivered to me in the first place.
Mm. I love that. I think we will end on that point, because I think that's, a really good piece of advice is to edit to the point where you it's feeling like it originally was. So where can people find out more about you, Mike?
In terms of design, my sort of branding, graphics, web stuff at mikekoos.com. They can follow my photography at Instagram, and my username is Mike Koos. That's K-U-S. Twitter on Mike Koos. So yeah, basically, and if you want to follow my design work and dribble, also Mike Koos.
So just Mike Koos everywhere then. That's
consistent. Pretty much.
Yeah, you've got the same advantage as me of having a relatively unusual name, which means you can often secure it.
Exactly. No, it's good.
But I would highly recommend following Mike, certainly on Instagram. I both love and hate his photographs at the same time. I love to see them, but I hate the fact that I struggle to take photographs like him, but he's shared some really good advice today, and I hope you found it useful. Mike, thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me, Paul.
Cool, so that was Mike. Very smart guy, really knows his stuff with imagery, very annoyingly talented as well.
He always has been.
Oh, just gets right up your nose, doesn't it? Okay, so let's quickly do our second sponsor of the day, which is Go Content. Go Content? Go
that,
Content! Yeah! Woo! No, Gather Content. Oh, it's so embarrassing, isn't it? I've just...
drinking today, Paul?
Yes, but that's beside the point. I've just recorded a little stupid... They do an advent calendar, a content strategy advent calendar, which are little videos that they send out, you know, every day over Christmas. And I recorded one of those from them. And I managed to screw up their name in that as well. Gathered Content, I called them in that, rather than Gather. So I don't know why they're sponsoring the show, really. I wouldn't if I was them.
It's all forms of advertising.
Well, yeah, even bad advertising. Yeah. There'd be all these people Googling Go Content and getting annoyed because it's not coming back. Anyway, Gather Content are a tool that helps you, guess what, gather content and manage all of that content. So it's about getting it and managing the content that you need for your website, your app, or even a social media campaign, to be honest. And it's a job that normally absolutely sucks, doesn't it? But Gather Content does make it a lot easier. It's got loads of features that we've covered in other episodes, but what I want to talk about today is that it's a great place not only to write content, but also to review it and approve it in one place. You can also use Gather Content to gather and manage all of the assets like imagery that goes alongside the content that you're creating. You can also edit and discuss the content actually within the app, and people can then go in and approve it. So it's very flexible from that point of view, and it also makes sure that people know what they've got to do and when they've got to do it, and you can agree on the roles and responsibilities that everybody has. So it's definitely worth checking out if you're working on any kind of content heavy or content driven website. They've got a 30-day free trial, no need for a credit card or anything like that. You can go and check them out by going to gathercontent.com/boagworld. Right. Apps. When it comes to imagery, I've got some apps for you that you ought to check out. One is a service that I use called Serve, SIRV.com. Remember, I was talking before the interview, I was talking about performance. Mm-hmm. And so all of the images on Boag World are now served via Serve. Right, so they're not hosted on Boag World at all. They're actually hosted on a third-party platform. And it's such a cool platform that I use all of the time. Now, I should be up front, which is that ages ago they gave me a free account. So I guess this may feel like a sponsored post, but it's not really. It's just, yeah, they haven't asked me to do it. You can try them out for free. It's not very expensive. They only charge you for the storage rather than your bandwidth, which is really good. And it starts at $19 a month, and it's really worth it. Not just because of the speed of them delivering, but they also have got a whole load of really cool functionality that they provide alongside it. So, for example, you can do 360-degree images where you can rotate stuff, which is brilliant, obviously, for an e-commerce site or something like that, where you can look around the product. They also allow you to manually resize and optimize images by changing the URL, right? So you can put various parameters on the URL, and it will basically instantaneously save and serve the correct size image. Also, it will supports responsive sites, so it will detect the container size that the image is in and then serve the appropriate sized image to that. So they've got so many cool little features that you can do. You can also even do things like add text overlays onto images or watermark them. You can change the color of images. It's just this kind of never ending set of little features and stuff. So they're worth checking out. I use them all the time. Another little tool you might want to check out if you're doing social media, imagery for social media, is a silly little tool. But if you're not a designer or don't come from a design background, it's really useful. And it's called Adobe Spark, right? So what's great about Adobe Spark is essentially you can, you know, I'm just trying to think. You know, if you're just trying to do a social update and you don't really have any particular imagery, but maybe you want to do a quote or something like that, or an infographic, or Adobe Spark just makes it really easy to create those kinds of graphics, you know, with a almost like those inspirational posters. Here's a picture in the background with a quote over the top of it, you know, that kind of thing.
A meme.
Is that what you call them? Is that what the cool kids call them? You
well,
know, yeah, you've no idea of you because you're not a cool kid. So it's got, you know, it can do basic typography. It can add iconography into it. It's got imagery that you can use, and then it'll save it all out the proper sizes for different social media platforms and that kind of stuff. They even do basic animation and video type stuff in it. So it's worth checking out as a kind of quick and easy tool. For those of you who want to edit some photography on your device, your mobile device, I mean, there are loads of different tools that will do this. I know that, you know, Mike was talking about you can do a lot of editing directly in Instagram, which is absolutely true. There's one tool, however, that I use a lot and I find it really useful, and it's a tool called Snapseed. Have you ever used that one, Marcus?
I haven't used it. I've heard of it.
Yeah,
I only ever kind of edit imagery on my desktop. I don't ever do it on the phone.
Yeah, well, Snapseed actually makes it really easy to do it on your desktop and on your phone. And actually, now I like Snapseed so much that I prefer editing on the phone than I do on the desktop now. So I tend to swap back to the phone whenever I want to edit a photograph because it's just so nice. And it's got, you know, it's got filters, yeah, wonderful. But it's, you know, got more sophisticated controls than that as well. Even down to, it'll, you know, do various face detection type stuff to kind of pick out people's faces and that kind of thing. But it's also got some nice features in terms of straightening buildings and things. You know, sometimes it kind of, you get distorted because of the way you've taken the photograph, you know, the perspective is all a bit weird. And so it can mess with that kind of stuff. It can do all your blurs and basically anything you need it to do, it can do. And it's all very intuitive. So that's really good. So that's a subtle phone call you've got going there.
Hang on.
What is that? Have we stepped back to the 1920s?
Yes, we are now in the 1920s.
Hello.
Hello.
Blanford 213.
Yes, Hartley Wintney 29.
So what was that? That your desk phone?
Yeah, I've got a fantastic old phone. But normally I have it forwarding to my mobile, but because I'm here for the next two or three days, I thought, I'll turn it off. But I can't just mute it. It's got a proper bell in it. So
they didn't have muting in 1920. You need to stuff some cloth around the bell or something.
It's inside it. It is a proper like a Bakelite phone.
That's so cool.
The reason why I keep it, it is the nicest handset to make calls on. It's fantastic.
Oh, right.
And you can, even in the kind of old-fashioned, you know, you can kind of push it up against your ear with your shoulder. It's that big.
Ooh.
It's fabulous.
Yeah, you can't do that with mobiles, can you, really? It's all a bit awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it's as clear as a bell, particularly for...
yeah, I heard.
when you're using it to speak to somebody, particularly for like overseas calls and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's I like it very much, but yeah.
Oh, well, there we go.
It did.
That's okay. So the very last app that I wanted to mention for this show is obviously Sketch, which has become such a... staple of the web design community as the primary tool for creating user interfaces. But I find it very good, not for image editing but necessarily, but for like creating social media type updates and imagery for that kind of thing. It's, you know, it's good for doing kind of vector-based imagery as well. So it's a handy little tool to have around for those kinds of purposes as well. And it's a little bit of an aside, but if you are still a Photoshop user and you're designing web design interfaces in Photoshop, I would really encourage you to check out Sketch. I was, you know, I used Photoshop since version one before it had layers, which just blows your mind when you think about how we used to build websites back then. But anyway, and I've used it all the way through, and I absolutely love Photoshop. And I was quite reluctant to look at Sketch, and there was all these cool kids kept coming around and say, "Oh yes, we're moving to Sketch now." I go, "Whoopee-doo, like I care." But I have to say, I've been totally converted, and that's what I've been working on the last couple of days doing the design I've been doing.
Cool.
It's very nice. Do the guys at Headscape use Sketch?
Some do. Some still use Photoshop. Lee uses Sketch. Ed uses Photoshop.
Right. See? Yeah. What do you do, eh? All right. Well, I think that's about wrapped us up for this week, I believe. Marcus, do you have a joke?
Yes, I do have a joke, Paul.
Okay.
I have to do an apology before I do the joke.
Why is that?
Because Ian Lasky has sent me lots of jokes, and I forgot to get back to him to say thank you. And I had to be reminded by you, Paul.
He wrote to me complaining about your behaviour.
Yeah, it was appalling. Anyway, I have got back to him, but thank you, Ian, and my apologies. Please do continue to send me jokes, because I like them very much. This one, I'm not sure. I think I might have said it on the show before, but it would have been so many years ago. It doesn't matter, so I'm going to do it again.
Okay.
So, here we go. I called the RSPCA today. Do I need to explain who the RSPCA is?
A pet charity in the UK.
Yep. And said, "I've just found a suitcase in the woods containing a fox and four cubs." "That's terrible," she replied. "Are they moving?" And I said, "I'm not sure, to be honest, but that would explain the suitcase."
Okay.
Come on, that's good.
It was kind of a bit predictable, wasn't it, really? You know, there you go. You try. And it's got to count for something.
Oh, I feel quite sort of like downtrodden now.
Oh, I'm sorry, Marcus. You're special in your own way. So, special. Yeah, exactly. So, next week we're going to be talking about social media. He says confidently without actually looking it up. So we're going to kind of dig into how to get the most from social media, some of the common mistakes that people make, all of that kind of stuff. I've no idea who we're going to have on the show. It might actually, I've got a bit of a cunning idea that it might be nobody, and it might be just you and me, because okay. We haven't done that for ages, have we, just the two of us?
Let's do it.
Well, I don't know yet, because I've got someone who I have potentially asked, they just haven't come back to me yet.
All right.
So if I won't chase somebody else, I'll just if they don't do it, we'll do it just two weeks. Because I think we can be entertaining, can't we, by ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, I tell great jokes.
And I know some shit. Maybe.
One or two bits and bobs.
So there we go. That'll be a good show. Everybody's really looking forward to that one now. All right, then. So until next week, thank you for listening. And goodbye. Photograph.com.